Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 16th of December 2013, the podcast that does the twist and makes it go like this. This is your host, Shane Killian. Joining me again this week are Tim Dyson and Daniel Wilcox. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Pleasure as always.
Glad to be back.
By the way, Tim, thanks for the shout-out on your YouTube channel, Lord T. Hawkeye.
Yeah, no problem. For what it's worth, it's not that much, but...
Tim, you mentioned something about having trouble making videos. Anything anyone can help with there?
Well, basically, I always used to use Fraps and record video game footage in the background as I talked. For no particular reason, I just thought it was better than still pictures. But recently, it started getting worse and worse. I was repeatedly complaining about having frame rate problems, and now, for some reason, Fraps is utterly unusable. As soon as I turn it on, the frame rate gets so bad the game's unplayable, so that's why you haven't seen me do game footage recently. I've just been used still pictures.
So it was just kind of a slow degradation. It's not like you upgraded a driver or something and it went south.
Yeah, I don't know why, but...
Well, if anyone has any ideas, please let Tim know, or you can send it to this podcast and we'll make sure Tim gets it, so... Hopefully you'll be making lots more videos for us in the future, because I know a lot of us miss them.
Yeah, I'll just use still pictures. My friend who draws my webcomic let me use hers from her site, so...
Okay, that's cool. Well, on a historical note, the 16th of December is the 240th anniversary of the Boston Tea Party, where colonists dressed up as Mohawk warriors and stormed three shipping boats and dumped the tea into the harbor.
Those despicable domestic terrorists!
Yep.
I'm sure someone thought so.
Well, this was a tax protest, and the reason why they targeted tea was because of the Townshend and Tea Act, which basically set up the East India Company as a monopoly tea company. And what happened is they were trying to get around this by smuggling in Dutch tea for cheaper, and so when they passed the Townshend Revenue Act, instead of taxing the tea company, the 25% tax on the tea as an excise tax, they started taxing the colonies directly, not just on tea, but all sorts of other products. And then in 1773, because the East India Company was not doing it all well financially, they passed the Tea Act, which let them bypass all the middlemen that everyone else had to go through and sell tea directly to the colonies, again trying to undercut the smugglers. And the only people legally allowed to sell tea in the colonies were co-signees of the East India Company, so it was basically a legal monopoly with subsidies on sales and shipping, and things escalated. Benjamin Rush called the East India Tea the seeds of slavery, and so they protested the landing of ships bringing tea and turned them around and sent them back to England. Massachusetts Governor Thomas Hutchinson one day refused to let three ships leave the harbor, the Dartmouth, the Eleanor, and the Beaver. Samuel Adams called for this massive town meeting, and there were like 7,000 people there, but things kind of got out of hand, and a lot of people just left before the meeting was over, and apparently a lot of them had come prepared with Mohawk costumes with them, and they dressed in those. That was for two reasons. One reason was they were hiding their identity, because it was illegal to protest, and the other was to show that they identified themselves as Americans and not British citizens, so it was basically a big middle finger to the crown. So they stormed the ships and dumped over 340 chests of tea into Boston Harbor on a big step towards the American Revolutionary War, and that was on December 16th, 1773.
And just think, the whole idea of taxation was to keep society working in harmony.
Yeah.
Why does that never seem to be working?
All right, well, let's dump into the sea the news of the bogus. So, are you guys gluten-free?
I doubt it.
Not in the slightest.
Nah, I rock the gluten myself, morning to night, yeah. This is the latest dietary boogeyman. Gluten is a protein that's found in a lot of grains, including wheat, so it's in bread and all sorts of stuff. It's been a part of our diet since the start of the Neolithic era, but 1 in 7 Americans are sensitive to gluten, and if they eat it, they get intestinal distress. And then you have celiac disease, which is an autoimmune response. The body attacks a glycoprotein called gliadin, but unfortunately it also attacks the parts of the small intestines that absorb nutrients from the blood, and that's obviously a big problem. And something like 1 in 133 Americans suffer from it, but the thing is, if you're not gluten intolerant and you don't have celiac disease, there's really no reason at all to avoid gluten.
It's fashion diets, and they're fashion diets for a reason. They don't really work. They just come and go. There's nothing scientific about that. You're never going to find fashion science theories.
Well, I guess you could say string theory is one. Sort of. Kind of. Maybe.
It's more of a thought experiment than a scientific theory, really.
Yeah. It's just a way of trying to correct all of the anomalies in the standard and quantum models. But this whole gluten idea seems to be that since some people are gluten intolerant, then it must be bad for everybody. And what's funny is that some people are lactose intolerant, but we don't say milk is bad for everybody.
There exist people who are allergic to water. I mean, where exactly do you draw the line?
But there's an article on Gizmodo.com that has some comments from Carol M. Shilson, Executive Director for the Center for Celiac Disease Research. Quote, "There is no scientific evidence that it's better for you if you don't have celiac disease. And in fact, if you do go gluten-free for a while and then say, screw this, I'm going back, it can be hard to get back to a regular diet because you're kind of losing your tolerance for it."
Yeah, that's why dieting doesn't work, because, as someone once said, dieting is like holding your breath. Eventually, you have to say uncle. So, if you want to lose weight, what you have to do is change your eating habits to something that you can feasibly actually do for the rest of your life. Don't deprive yourself completely, just take it easy on it. Moderation.
And it's not like it's impossible to go to a gluten-free diet, but a lot of people, when they just say, okay, I'm going to avoid gluten, and they switch to other foods, first of all, you end up at increased risk for nutritional deficiencies, but also the foods you switch to usually end up being higher in sugars and fats.
Out of the frying pan, into the fire. Ooh.
Really, it's just a simple blood test will tell you if you're sensitive to gluten. If you have gluten antibodies in your system, and make sure you get the test while you're on a steady diet that includes gluten, then you might want to think about cutting back, but just beware of what you switch to, and for the rest of us, there's no problem with it.
This is pretty cut and dry, honestly.
Okay, but this is something cool. Apparently, if you live in San Francisco and you work for Google, they'll send a bus around to a bus stop to pick you up to take you to work.
Oh, that sounds like a nice little perk.
Let me guess. There's some legislation that's attempting to curtail it.
Actually, no, not legislation. In fact, there's legislation to help make it easier to happen. But still, a lot of people in San Fran are protesting it. And as near as I can tell, it's just one of those hate-the-rich things. A group of protesters surrounded and blocked one of the buses for more than half an hour, which means, of course, the people on the bus couldn't get to work, so...
Yeah, they call themselves anti-gentrification. There was a group of that in Vancouver's that was making the rounds in the paper a while ago, and I don't get these people at all. Like, a lot of the woos out there, I don't agree with them, but at least I can understand how they would arrive at the conclusions they have, even if they're wrong. But this, I just plain don't get it. I just don't get what their ire is.
It has something to do with the fact that they're stopping at city bus stops. And really, the only argument that I can think of against this is, like, if they're at a bus stop at a time when a city bus needs to get there, they might delay the city buses. But other than that, I don't really see the problem with it.
At worst, the city bus will wait a minute or two, but I'm pretty sure these people would have made arrangements with them to ensure that doesn't happen.
Well, that's what they're working on now. There's a plan with the city, with Google, Facebook, Apple, and Genentech. And what they'll be doing is they'll be paying for permits to use these municipal stops legally, and they'll exchange data back and forth with the city so that they can all plan their routes accordingly without having to, you know, run over each other trying to get there.
Peaceful coordination.
It's actually nice to see for once with the government, to actually work with them.
Yeah, but what's so bad about this that people feel the need to interrupt everyone else's day and do all this?
As near as I can tell, it's just one of these hate-the-rich things. And here's an interesting thing that happened. Apparently, one of the employees went and had a little talk with them, or maybe I should say went and had a little yell with them. So take a listen to this.
Look, I can pay my rent. Can you pay your rent?
Can you pay your rent?
Well, then you know what? Why don't you go to a city where you can't afford it? You know, because this is a city for the right people who can afford it. If you can't afford it, it's time for you to leave. Okay? I'm sorry. It's time for you to leave. Okay? Yeah, look, if you can't pay your rent, I'm sorry. Get a better job.
Where are you from?
Look, I don't need to tell you that. Like, I need you guys to move right now. Like, this is ridiculous. What kind of fucking city is this? What kind of city is this?
Can you just say why you're living here if you don't like...
Yeah, not very nice, but I'd be pretty ticked off if people were stopping me from getting to work for something that was petty as that.
Yeah, but he didn't really seem to be, like, a really nice guy, though. And, of course, the media's jumping all this, going, hey, you know, see what jerks rich people are. Except for the San Francisco Bay Guardian, they found out that the guy yelling at them was really union organizer Max Bell Alper.
Oh?
Uh-huh.
He's not a Google employee?
He's not a Google employee.
Oh, class act, guys. Seriously.
Yeah.
Unions. Everyone who's not one of us doesn't deserve to exist in their little world. Unbelievable.
Yeah, people wonder why we have such a problem with them. You know, there was that Walmart Black Friday thing, where all these supposed Walmart workers that were protesting were really union employees with other companies. You know, you had that whole hostess fiasco, all the stuff with teachers' unions. People wonder why we have a problem with unions. I mean, if you can't make your point without lying to people and pretending to be someone else for the purpose of strawmanning or making it look like support you don't have, you know, is your cause really worth it?
Yeah, we don't hate unions because we hate the poor. We hate unions because of all this shadiness. Why?
Now, I don't mind unions as a concept, mind you. I'm sure you two don't either.
No, it's only when you get the government involved and say, okay, you have to join a union, and this is the union we recognize, and stuff like that. If you have a free market union, it's basically a mutual aid society, and I got no problems with that at all. When unions started in this country, that's basically what they were, and they did a lot of good.
Yeah, when we talk about them, what we're usually talking about is the politically associated ones, and pretty much political association will make pretty much anything bad.
And apparently the Bay Guardian tracked him down and asked him why he did what he did, and what he said was, quote, "This is political theater to demonstrate what's happening to the city. It's about more than just the bus. These are enormous corporations that are investing in this community. These companies like Google should be proud of where they're from and invest in their communities." Okay, what does that have to do with... And so they asked him, it was like, why were you being deceptive like that? It's like he was trying to turn it around and say, well, he said political theater, like it was like a demonstration or performance art or something like that. But they pressed him on it and he said, "People are talking all over the country about what's happening in San Francisco. That's the debate we need to have here. The more we talk about it, the more we think about it, the more we're going to see that tech companies need to contribute." And again, no actual comment about his duplicity here.
Wait, who is he talking about when he says we?
I think it just means people in general. He just wants to get people talking about this issue.
He never even actually stated what exactly the issue was here. He's pretty much a shining example of the old saying, a politician is someone who can talk for hours and never actually say anything. He'd never actually really said anything in that whole quote.
Yeah, I mean, he's talking about, oh, companies need to contribute and invest in their communities. Well, they built companies there and gave people jobs, and there's a lot of people now who are working who wouldn't have those jobs if they didn't come there, so I don't know. What you complaining about?
What he means is invest in something he wants.
But they asked him again why he didn't say who he really was and stuff, and he just came back with, this was improv political theater, so he was just kind of evading the whole thing. But even now, most places in the media, this is still being just reported uncritically. Hey, see how horrible these rich people are, so, yeah.
The media really has done the public a disservice like this. This is why they should never have political ties, because that's just a clear conflict of interest, as we see here. They'll never say anything bad about anyone with political connections, because they don't want to make waves and get in trouble.
But wait, don't all the people they're badmouthing also have political connections?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other can of worms.
Yeah, but for the most part, the tech companies have been kind of avoiding that. Microsoft was basically browbeat into sending lobbyists to Washington. Google, I think, has gotten in a little bit, just coming in and saying, please let us come in and build a business. And I think they have done some of the stuff like, you know, give us land you took with eminent domain, which is bad. But for the most part, tech companies seem to be at least better than most about just not getting involved in all the cronyism and everything.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's one of the industries with the most development over the shortest period of time.
Yep, and one of the least regulated, too.
Yes, indeed. It's the example I love to point to when everyone goes on about lack of regulation and blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, and whenever they do that, you're like, well, what are you talking about? And they usually talk about one of two things, the financial industry or the healthcare industry. easily the two most regulated industries there are.
The question you always want to ask them is, okay, so what regulation would you say should be implemented that would have prevented whatever disaster they're complaining about? And I will bet you dollars to donuts, whatever they describe would be a regulation that actually was already on the books at the time anyway.
Probably. Well, and they all say things like, well, we need to pass smart regulations and consult with experts and stuff like that. And it's like, gee, yeah, I wonder why no one ever thought of that before.
Well, here's a tip. If you have to resort to lying and deception to get your point across, that should be your first sign that maybe you ought to rethink your point.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Backup sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. Pagosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been a satisfied GoDaddy customer for over 10 years now. Their prices are great, and their 24/7 support is second to none. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or many other services, and get 35% off by typing in the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet service. Get your own .com with a personalized email address or establish your online business in a snap, all for 35% off. Order before the end of 2013 and you can get $99.coms or $1 a month website builder with a free domain or $99 a month economy hosting with a free domain. All sorts of great savings. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON.
Well, you know, a lot of people say that what we really need are more Republicans. Because, you know, those Republicans are all for small government and free markets and want to get government out of your life and sequester, Tea Party, blah, 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 right?
Are we talking about the ones that pass TARP or the ones who try to ban drugs, gay marriage, etc.?
And Hitler was just trying to improve the human race.
Actually, right now, I'm talking about Michigan Republicans who have just passed a law prohibiting health insurance plans from covering abortions unless the woman's life is in danger. You know, because Republicans believe in free markets.
So what's the rationale for this one?
Well, abortion is murder.
Well, that, and I think it's a, you know, taxpayer money shouldn't be going to abortions because now we have these healthcare exchanges. And the exchanges are done through the states, and then the states set the rules about the exchanges. And what they're calling this is the Abortion Insurance Opt-Out Act. Someone needs to explain to them what the word opt means.
Isn't this kind of like the same rationale? We can't allow open borders because immigrants will mooch off of the entitlement system?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, it's a little more like some people don't approve of abortion, so they don't want their money going towards supporting it if they have a moral objection to it. Well, to that I say, well, I have a moral objection to war. Can I have my money back now?
Yeah, please, let me do that. Yeah, but I mean, opt-out would mean that ordinarily it would pay for abortions, except you're saying, okay, now I don't want it to. This is the exact opposite. In fact, not only can you not opt in and have abortions covered, you have to go and get insurance separately that would specifically cover abortions for you to do that. And since this includes cases of rape and incest, if someone is a victim of rape or incest, and, you know, they can't exactly turn around and go, oh, I was raped, now I'm pregnant, so I guess now I'd better opt in, right? Yeah, it doesn't
matter. Because, you know, going through the paperwork of getting insurance just wasn't fun enough the first time. Let's make them do it twice.
Yeah.
You know, this is This is one case. Feminists, I'm not going to fight you on this one. Go ahead and tear these guys all you like.
But my thing is just the Obamacare exchanges, they just gave states even more control over our health insurance choices. So if you're a liberal and you supported Obamacare and you didn't see this coming, take this as a lesson and next time think things through a bit more, because this was 100% foreseeable.
And everyone's going on about how the insurance companies are allowed to run wild with no regulations. Like, how do you argue that? How could you possibly argue that in light of all this? I mean, it's not like this is the first time we've ever had insurance being told what it can and cannot cover.
Hey, well, you'll definitely want to be sitting down for this next one. Aaron Key is a mentally disabled 19-year-old who was encouraged to get a tattoo to promote Squid Smoke Shop in Milwaukee. The tattoo was of a giant squid smoking a joint, and his compensation for becoming a permanent walking billboard was just $150. And they did the same with his friend, Marquis Glover.
This story seems suspiciously familiar.
Maybe, if you think back a bit. Because it turns out, although this sounds like, oh, there are these horrible capitalists, you know, exploiting these mentally disabled people for their own profit, come to find out, Squid Smoke Shop is a front for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, and the guys who run the shop are undercover ATF agents.
I still have to wonder who's stupid enough to lump all those things together. especially alcohol and explosives.
They're not a good mix, are they?
They don't keep all their evidence in one room, do they?
I hope not. It's like they just keep adding stuff onto it, you know, because before explosives, it was just, you know, Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. And I was like, wait a minute. Alcohol is legal. Tobacco is legal. Firearms are legal. Why do we have this? So they added explosives, I guess, to. But anyway, they convinced these teens to get the tattoos, and then they had them arrested.
Isn't this entrapment?
I think it's beyond entrapment.
Yeah, when you do it to someone who's mentally disabled and thus more vulnerable to this sort of thing. I mean, really? You have to create your own criminals? You just ran out of criminals or something? You've caught all the thieves, all the bank robbers, all the murderers, and now you just have to create criminals now? Oh, wait. No, you didn't. They're all still out there, so what the heck are you wasting time with this nonsense?
It's like that old meme says, drugs will ruin your life, so if we catch you with them, we'll throw you in a cage and ruin your life.
So, Daniel, if you're wondering why this sounds familiar, earlier this year, a similar thing happened. Still in Milwaukee, agents hired a man with brain damage to promote a different storefront and arrested him. At the time, the ATF officials told Congress this was an isolated case, but now it's happened again.
Oh, I was thinking more the whole thing with the high school kids.
That's happened, too. We've covered stories like that. The drug enforcement agents go into schools, they pose as students, and they befriend students with mental disabilities and autism and whatever, and get them to buy drugs for them, and then they bust them.
Ugh. I mean, not only is that horribly immoral, you're also risking getting actual criminals let off the hook. Like, maybe these people haven't got a chance in heck of defending themselves in court, but now what if you try and do this to an actual criminal, and then he pulls up the entrapment excuse and gets away with it?
Well, not to mention the fact that people who do drugs shouldn't be criminals in the first place. Yeah.
But what if they actually catch, like, a murderer or a thief in a method like this or something like that? Really bad precedent to start on.
And the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has discovered that the ATF has been doing this routinely. Their undercover agents befriend mentally disabled people, get them to promote an illegal storefront, and they arrest them. And this has been going on in at least 5 different cities. And I'm sorry, when it happens that much, it's not an isolated incident. It's policy.
Yeah, new rule. If you try to claim isolated incident, then the rest of the force has to have, upon discovering it, immediately move to counter it. Because if that's not happening, then that's top-to-bottom corruption. Like, these two guys could not have acted alone. They needed the support of the entire force in order to make this happen.
It's gang loyalty, plain and simple.
Yeah, they only go with the isolated incident thing when they get caught at it.
Well, if this isn't proof enough that the war on drugs is corrupting our police forces and turning them into bigger criminals than the criminals they were trying to catch, I don't know what would.
History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's Liberty Classroom. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, Liberty Classroom teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you'll get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit LibertyClassroom.com. Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again. Now it's time to ruin the online credit of this week's Biggest Bogon Emitter. And this week it goes to Jim Edwards of Business Insider, and the title of his article should tell you all you need to know. Bitcoin proves the libertarian idea of paradise would be hell on earth.
And I still have spots in front of my eyes from all the projection this thing has been emitting.
Well, and it's also telling the picture he chooses. It's like there's a shipwreck or something in the background. In the foreground, there's a guy with dark skin and a cloth around his head holding a firearm. And the caption says, "Welcome to Bitcoinistan." Yeah, because there's nothing racist or anything there.
And, you know, when I think of a free society, Africa is just the first thing that comes to my mind.
So he goes through all of his reasons why Bitcoin is horrible and therefore libertarianism is horrible. His first one is, Bitcoin is most useful for criminals.
Oh, really?
Meanwhile, forced eugenics is horrible, therefore science is horrible. Same reasoning, really.
Well, it says, currently, quote, currently, for ordinary people, cash and credit work just fine. While some mainstream businesses do take Bitcoin, there is no compelling reason yet for ordinary people to use it. If you're a criminal, however, there are very compelling reasons to use it. You can transfer vast sums of cash completely anonymously. We've talked before about how it isn't really anonymous. Everyone has a copy of the blockchain and can go through all the different transactions, and all you really need is just one link to the outside world, and you can follow where it goes and who's doing it.
And it's not like criminals weren't transferring large sums of cash before Bitcoin. I mean, what's this guy thinking? Does he think criminals didn't exist before Bitcoin or something?
Well, and he says, quote, cash transfers are a real problem for criminals. When you can't use bank accounts, lugging around vast sums of cash gets old pretty quickly. Does he not realize that most criminals, drug dealers, terrorists, things like that, routinely launder their money through the banking system?
Yeah, like, this is a common pattern you're going to be seeing throughout this article. Every argument he makes about Bitcoin could easily be applied to the current monetary system, sometimes even more so.
Well, he's also downplaying all of the legitimate businesses there, you know, implying that there really aren't that many. It says some mainstream businesses do take Bitcoin. Well, I'm looking at a page here, which is a list, and I doubt very seriously it's comprehensive, but lots of different places that accept Bitcoin, and I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling, and that's just through the table of contents. That's just through the list of categories of businesses all sorts of things. I mean, this is a huge page. I've got a link to it in the show notes. Of course, there are a lot of currency exchanges, but there's also bulk trades, gift debit cards, precious metals, contracts, equities, all sorts of stuff.
Tell me, how long did it take you to find that page?
10 seconds. Google search.
So we have to conclude this guy did less than 10 seconds of research on this point.
Yeah.
Most impressive. That's longer than most of them stay to spend on their research.
Oh, man. I mean, we've got, like, web hosting, web design, a lot of dedicated server hosting you can buy with bitcoins, email, VoIP services, security services, mobile app development, software, all sorts of stuff, games, graphic design, music. And I'm only about, I'm not even two-thirds of the way down the list. I've just been scrolling through this. All sorts of, now I'm down to where you can buy material stuff, including automobiles, alternative energy. There are a lot of superstores. You can actually buy physical games with Bitcoin, jewelry. I mean, it's just this huge list of stuff. And, I mean, there's probably a drop in the bucket when you look at the number of businesses that are out there, but still, you know, Bitcoin's kind of just getting started in this idea that there's not really any reason why a business would want to take Bitcoin. It just doesn't ring true.
Yes, I mean, okay, think who was the first credit card company?
I'm actually not sure.
But I guess since there was already one credit card beforehand, there was no reason to have other credit card companies.
Yeah, every time something new comes along, you get these same naysayers. And it's funny how they think they're the first people who ever came up with these arguments. It's really such a failure of imagination.
Well, and he goes into what we talked before about Silk Road and this Ross Ulbricht guy who is accused, allegedly, of hiring a hitman to murder six people. But the thing is, as we talked about it at the time, he hired them with, or attempted to hire them, allegedly, with cash transfers, not Bitcoin.
Like, once again, does this guy think that some hits didn't happen before Bitcoin? They happened all the time. This is nothing new, and it's not something Bitcoin invented, or even... And of course, he presents no evidence that Bitcoin has made it worse in any way, so this observation means absolutely nothing.
And of course, he specifically points out Ulbricht was a libertarian.
Where does it say that?
Citation needed.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe he was. Okay, so he's a libertarian. Does he eat bread, too? Those horrible bread eaters. You know, if only they'd gone gluten-free. This is what that one webpage on the Freeman called nut-picking. I love that term. I'm going to be using that a lot. And he goes into the canard about, oh, Bitcoin is horribly unstable, and he shows the graph. And the graph actually doesn't make it look that unstable. In fact, it shows the price, you know, steadily going up over time, and lately, you know, it had that big shoot up to about 1,200 and then dropped down to 700, now it's back up to 1,000 or something like that. But, I mean, first of all, no one would look at that and think it's horribly unstable. I mean, if that were a stock, you'd be looking at it and say, hey, I think they're doing pretty good.
And let's see, let's compare this to the value of the U.S. dollar over the years, shall we? Yeah, I've seen that chart where it's pretty stable for a while, and then it's just been a catastrophic plummet ever since, like... Yeah, pot calling the kettle black here, lad.
But, I mean, the thing people have to understand is the current price of anything, whether it's Bitcoin or a stock or, you know, Hostess fruitcake or something like that. I don't know if Hostess make fruitcakes. I just said that. But whatever. The price is always set at the margin. It's not really any kind of intrinsic thing of what the thing itself is doing. So this isn't really, when we say the Bitcoins are currently trading at 1,000, that doesn't really mean a Bitcoin is worth $1,000. It means that currently of the people who right at the moment just happen to be wanting to buy or sell Bitcoins, that's what they're trading at. And that's all it really means. And, you know, I don't really get, you know, why this is supposed to be a big deal. Okay, yes, it's still an emerging market. It's still in its infancy. You know, it's going to continue to grow and stabilize as more and more people get into it. And that's true with everything. You know, like what people said about the Facebook stock when it first came out, how it was swinging wildly all over the place. But then, you know, after a while, it kind of found its equilibrium. And now it's just a stock like any other.
Yeah, nothing particularly exceptional about this. And really, comparing it to fiat currency, it's really not a good comparison to make.
But what he says is, quote, Bitcoinistan makes the Weimar Republic look sedate. Even if you could live with a crime, The instability makes transactions wildly unfair to the party on the downside.
Wait, what crime?
Well, all the crime he was talking about before, you know, all these people using bitcoins to do criminal stuff.
Using the same money as a criminal makes you part of a crime? Oh, give me a break.
I don't know. But, I mean, the Weimar Republic happened because Germany was having to pay for all the reparations because of the Treaty of Versailles. So they were just printing money like crazy to do that. There was all that inflation. And so you'd have to get paid, you know, get your wheelbarrow full of money and take it straight to the market and spend it before the price went down. Exactly the opposite is happening here. For the most part, with the exception of a couple downswings, which you have from time to time, for the most part, you get Bitcoin, and then it gets more valuable over time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the Germans at the time would have taken a currency like that any day of the week.
Oh, yeah. This next part, I don't even understand at all. Quote, Bitcoin has produced comical wealth inequality. Libertarians don't care about inequality, of course. They see it as a reflection of individuals' natural talents, blah, blah, blah. But even the most hardcore free marketeer ought to blanch at the incredible level of inequality already endemic to Bitcoin. Just 47 individuals own nearly one-third of all Bitcoins. About 927 people control half the entire currency. There are just over 1 million Bitcoin holders. The vast majority of them own mere crumbs. But does he think people are, like, putting their life savings into Bitcoin or something?
Oh, and the projection here is just incredible. I mean, do I have to dig out the statistics of what wealth is like in the U.S. right now?
Yeah, and how it just got worse after the welfare state.
Ugh. I mean, yeah, because you guys have been doing such a bang-up job of making wealth equal all over the board. Oh, wait, no you haven't. Those with political connections are making out like bandits, and everyone else is working like crazy just to get meager salaries out of it. Good gravy.
It was like, okay, 1 million people who own bitcoins just have what he says, crumbs. Well, you know, I guess that would be me, because, you know, I have never even owned so much as a single bitcoin. You know, I've, you know, traded some of it in for gold now, so now it's even smaller. But you know the reason why is? Because I haven't really bought any. You know, and some people go, okay, I'll put a little money into Bitcoin and see what happens. You know, buy 75 cents worth of Bitcoins or something like that, or, you know, whatever, and just see what it's like, and then just kind of hold on to them. And, you know, it's not like, you know, these people only have tiny amounts of Bitcoins because they're poor and can't afford to feed their families or anything.
What's this guy basing this off of?
You might want to be sitting down for this next one. And make sure your desk is cleared off because your head might be hitting it. Bitcoin hoarding could produce a cartel that controls all Bitcoin. A study from... Hold on. Wait for it. A study from Cornell has claimed that if Bitcoin miners cooperate, they could end up controlling most Bitcoins and thus could control the currency's price. The cartel could beggar or enrich all Bitcoin holders overnight, depending on how they trade it. In other words, they can set the amount and the price to whatever they want. And then he says, quote, that kind of thing just doesn't happen with the dollar. What does he think the Federal Reserve is?
I'm sorry, but that just...
What is he talking about? Is this guy just lying outright, or is he seriously that clueless?
I mean, you know, the whole point of the Federal Reserve is to say how much money there should be and how much the dollar should be worth at any given time, and that's their whole point. Here he's saying that there's nothing like that with the dollar. It's like, what?
I don't know what planet this guy's living on, but I'd like to visit it sometime, because it's clearly not this one.
Just sounds so... It's like such a bizarre world.
Well, this last one he has actually is kind of a point against Bitcoin, but again, it's still a point with the dollar. It's what he calls accidental chaos, and the examples he gives are a guy who lost $600 because he reset his mobile phone, permanently deleting his Bitcoin wallet. Another guy threw away an old hard drive. I heard about this one. He's got like $6.5 million worth of Bitcoins on this hard drive, and he's looking for that in a landfill now. And another guy lost about $90,000 because he hit delete at the wrong time. So what's happening is, you have your Bitcoin wallet, and Bitcoins are encrypted. And it's really very strong encryption, which makes it really difficult, pretty much impossible to steal unless you go outside of the Bitcoin system and do something else, like stealing someone's wallet, because the wallet is what has the decryption keys. And the only reason why these people lost their bitcoins is they didn't back them up. They only had one copy of their wallet and then lost it. But I mean, you know, if you have your wallet, your physical wallet, your real wallet, and you have $300 in there and you accidentally drop it down a drain pipe or something like that, you've lost $300. So I don't really get how, you know.
That's not an argument that that wallets are bad or something like that. What's he talking about? That's just an argument that you need to be more careful with your wallet.
Yeah. Yeah, back it up. You know, make sure you have a nice strong password on it so that people can't do it. I actually have mine backed up in my LastPass blob, you know, that you can put in the secure notes and you can attach files to the secure notes. So I added the Bitcoin wallet onto that. So, yeah, I mean, there are ways to, you know, back it up, keep it secure.
So his article is more just a proof of what I've always said, that everything you're afraid of happening without government control already exists. Every single argument he's made against Bitcoin here is more a case with the fiat currency.
Yeah, really, it's nothing but a hit piece, and a pretty lame one at that, and it reeks of the kind of desperation that can only make Jim Edwards this week's biggest bogon emitter. You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers. And Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.bogosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.bogosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. So now it's time to retroactively diagnose this week's. Daniel, you want to do the honors? Nicely done.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. Like last time, I just couldn't resist.
Okay, backstory. A 16-year-old boy, Ethan Couch, killed 4 pedestrians in a car accident. His blood alcohol level was 0.24.
Ouch.
Yeah, I guess especially for like a 16-year-old, this guy was 4 sheets to the wind, and so this is a real tragedy. So the consequences for him are going to be pretty dire, right?
You'd think.
Well, he's not violating intellectual property or dealing in drugs or anything, so it's not that big a deal, I guess.
Yeah, it's not the real major crimes, but see, Couch's family is rich, but that didn't have the effect you might think it would. They didn't bribe the judge or use their political connections or anything. And it wasn't even the bogus reason that got Martin Joel Erzinger off light. He struck a bicyclist and fled the scene, and the judge said, quote, "Felony convictions have some pretty serious job implications for someone in Mr. Erzinger's profession." So that's laughable enough. But no, this is far more bogus than that. While prosecutors were asking for 20 years in prison, the defense put up psychologist G. Dick Miller to say that the defendant was suffering from what he called affluenza, which basically means that rich kids aren't responsible for their actions. Yeah, the idea was his parents had taught them that wealth brings privilege, so he never learned any link between behavior and consequences.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of poor people who teach their kids that being poor gives you a free pass to steal whatever you want, and yet I don't see them getting off.
Yeah. I mean, it would be just a desperate defense trick, but the court bought it. Judge G.
Are you sure they didn't bribe the judge?
Well, that would explain a lot, actually, but Judge Gene Boyd sentenced him to 10 years probation and rehabilitation at a private counseling center that costs $450,000 a year, which his father will pay for.
Good grief. And what was that everyone was going on about how we need these people to protect us from the rich? Give me a break.
Well, and the thing is, wondering what's going on in the judge's head, what's this going to do except reinforce this so-called affluenza problem? He did something terrible and he basically got away with it. He got off light.
The logic of schmucks. Sorry, I've been waiting for the longest time to be able to say that.
Yeah, schmucks seems to cover it.
This is what I've always said. Government and politicians and all that sort of thing are not going to protect you from the rich because they are the rich. If you can't grasp this simple fact, then don't even bother talking about politics. You don't know anything.
So this sentence, which will achieve the opposite of what needs to happen in this boy's life, just has to make Judge Gene Boyd this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this Taste Great, Less Filling edition of the Bogosity Podcast. Please visit the forums at Bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the Bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks once more to my co-hosts, Daniel Wilcox and Tim Dyson.
All right, that's a wrap.
Till next time, be aware and be wise.
This is the last regular podcast for 2013. We're going on break for the holidays, but we'll be back to ring in the new year with our year in review, including our 2012 Idiot of the Year. Until then, here's a quote from Albert Hubbard. Responsibility is the price of freedom. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.
Christmas time is coming, and the most classic of Christmas stories is A Christmas Carol. But how much do you know about the original Charles Dickens novella? Have you dismissed it as a children's book with one-dimensional characters amounting to nothing but platitudes and cliches? Maybe your appreciation of the book was even muted by those dry, boring, annotated books they made you read in school. My book, the sarcastically annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, uses both facts and humor to present the book in a way you probably haven't seen it before. Giving praise when deserved and beratement when warranted, this book is put in the perspective of its time and shows a dimensional, multi-layered Ebenezer Scrooge from start to finish. Skepticism, history, and even economics are employed to show the book in relation to today in an easily accessible format. Appreciate the Christmas of your youth all over again. Get The Sarcastically Annotated A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, available at Amazon and on PDF as well.
So now it's time to retroactively diagnose this week's...
But before you said rectify, I was wondering what you were thinking of.
Yeah, that's why I have to do multiple takes, because my mouth tries to say the wrong word.